This is AC2GS, and it's time for the technical test. As I mentioned, I'm AC2GS, and I'm joined by the control operator to get the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net meets every Sunday night at 8 p.m. It has been doing that for more than 42 years, mostly under the care of Dick P2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent chief almost 3 years ago. And we missed him a great deal, but in his memory we continue with the technical net, and hopefully we use it as an opportunity to teach each other and learn from each other and enjoy each other's company and be amused. If you get upset by anything that you hear on the technical net, that's not the way it's supposed to work. We're supposed to have fun. So with that in mind, let's bring on the next technical net. I will drop for a second and then recite once again the usual link that I offer everyone. If you want to reach me and you can't do it via the radio, then email is as good as any other method. That would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions. Those are questions that people were curious about but didn't have the opportunity to be in front of their radio on a Sunday night, and so they would email it to previous co-hosts of the technical net, and the co-host would read it to Dick, and Dick would answer the question. Nowadays, you could listen in with the audio stream, which is available to anyone with internet access. We'll get into that very shortly. Or you could wait until it becomes archived in amateurradio.tv's website. He holds the audio recordings of technical nets going as far back as December of 2006. So that's mailbag questions. Also, if you have a topic for discussion, now it kind of falls into three categories. Some people notice that something has become very topical for discussion and they have an expertise in the subject and want to give a little presentation on it. They email me and I say, sure, that's great. I'd love to have that. So that's one type of topic discussion. Another is where someone doesn't feel that they're an expert but would like to be part of a discussion. That's another type. And the third type are the guys who don't really know much about the subject but would like to learn. So their attitude is that you and some other guys chat about it, and I'll listen, and if something strikes me, I'll participate as well. So that's the topic. Also, we're always looking for puzzles, puzzles of a technical nature. It's great if they're amateur radio related, but if they're technology or science related, I'll take them. As I often say, and some people take the wrong idea about it, I would prefer puzzles that could not be solved by Googling them in a tenth of a second. Just so that we have a little bit of an opportunity to kind of to look at the problem and address it. You know, it's not always a destination. Sometimes it's the journey that's more important. Let me stop for a second. Okay. In addition to those are the things. Also, call WS2N if you have a space related type of a story you want me to ask Paul to take a look at it. Email him directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. Interesting articles that I've collected over the last week, and I hope you would find them interesting. So they're available on my link page. Just click them and you get to read them. They're up 24/7, so you don't have to do it now. You don't have to do it today. You can do it next month. I keep them available for a very, very long time. Keep them by years, so you can go back and see what my link page suggested people to read 3 years ago if you're so inclined. You get there by typing in roy.ac2gs.com. Again, the link page is roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's very, very busy. Lately it's been somewhat quiet, but you know, it ebbs and it flows. To get onto the chat room, it's very easy. Just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. The link to get the internet audio stream of the technical net is available at technet.ac2gs.com. Again, you can type in your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the TechNet stream. And because a few people asked me to keep it up for the rest of the week, it's available pretty much 7/24. Occasionally I have to reboot the system and such, but it's usually there. And of course, once again, I want to remind people, MyKC2NJI has a great archive of the technical net going as far back as September 2006. So please avail yourself of the wisdom of some very smart hams that unfortunately have either moved away from this area or passed away. But their wisdom remains their audio files available. So that's my usual bunch of links. Let me drop for a second and I'll be right back. Okay, the plan is for questions. As always, I would prefer amateur radio related questions to go first, but we will open the doorway for any science technology related questions as the night progresses. And at 10:15, full WS2N will come on for the SpaceNet report. I have a few puzzles in my back pocket. They're little teeny tiny ones. They're not really big. And I've had them for a while now, but thankfully we've been so busy with other things on the technical net that I haven't had to use them up. They're very few and far between. So with all that in mind, anyone out there who has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, feel free to hit that push to talk button and give me your first name and call sign, and I will put you on the list.
Yeah, Roy, I'm open, 82OGD. By the way, earlier somebody was skiing on top of you.
KD2UK with a question.
Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Please.
KD2UQK with a question.
Okay, Rob, I put you down. Anyone else for tonight?
KD2REK, just a big thank you for listening this evening. You do a fantastic job. Really appreciate it. Kilo Delta 2, Romeo Echo Kilo. Listening.
Okay, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. What's your first name?
Name is Brian.
Okay, Brian. Thank you. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight, please? As per usual, we will be asking again as time permits. But it's more likely you'll get an early slot if you put your name in early. So if anyone else wants to put their name in, please do it now.
Alpha Bravo 6, Mike Bravo.
Very good, Jeff. Jeff is the net control operator for the Papa antenna net every Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. He has a great net, and if you have access, and I'm sure, I always blank out on the multiple different ways you can connect to the Papa network. Papa network is a very famous repeater network on the West Coast, and he has a technical net that specializes in antenna theory and discussion of antenna. So I'll put you on the list, Jeff, and when we get to you, you can mention the different ways of linking up to the Papa network.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active. Okay, that's an interesting one. Anyone else wants to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, we will start with Craig, KD2OGB. What's your question for tonight, Craig?
Yeah, as far as I'm talking about my computer, this has kind of been bugging me for a little bit. Some of that. Yeah, this has been bugging me for a little bit. When I put in my SD cards from my DSLR, I right now have a micro card in right now using a reader, and it picks it up just fine. There are some SD cards, mainly on my main cameras, my 5DSR and SL1, and they are formatted for those cards, but sometimes when I plug them into the computer and I go to browse through, all of the photos don't load right away like some of them do, and when I go to right-click on them, the program just freezes and then just closes on me, and then I try pulling the card out, putting it back in, and there are times where I end up just doing it without ejecting, and it just doesn't want to read the card sometimes, and then after a while I get it to read. Well, what could be the problem?
Okay, that's a strange one. The obvious suggestion is to just make sure that the contacts that you push them in are nice and burnished and clean, because it might be as simple as a contact problem. I would probably not use those SD cards consistently, because unfortunately SD cards do have been known to fail. And they're a big pain in the backside to bring. Some of them you can bring back, but some of them you can't bring back. So it might be a quality issue that it might not be exactly up to the proper spec that your computer will tolerate, whereas your camera is a much more tolerant, has a much more tolerant chipset and will take a messier SD. Card. So I would kind of, personally, if this was happening to me, I would upgrade. I would try to stay with name brand SD cards. There's a lot of counterfeit SD cards on the market, and although they publish speeds and capacities, very often they're both not accurate assessments. So that would be my two cents.
W2KW3.
Yes, Cass.
Okay. It should also be a matter of caching these things. If you notice that when you first open up your image display program, it takes a while to populate. Some of these files may be quite large, and it just takes a certain amount of time to read them in, or there's a certain amount of memory that the program may reserve for images to display, and you may be out of that memory, whether it's actually out of physical memory or it's a limitation of the program of how many buffers it's allocated. I cannot tell you. I'm guessing by the fact that you're using a DSLR, you're probably using quite high quality images, which take up possibly many megabytes of space, especially if they're in something like RAW format. AC2GS,
W2KW3. Okay, very good point, Ken. Let me make sure I have the repeater. Okay. Yeah, it could be that that the transfer speeds are not as fast as you're used to, and they're large files. Also, I would urge you, try not to eject SD cards from your computer without going to the little, the lower right side of the taskbar and in software, ejecting that removable media. It will clear the cache and make sure that it won't introduce any corruption. Sometimes poorly written software will cache some of its output to the SD card or any removable medium and won't necessarily flush it as soon as possible. So that extra step ensures that if there's anything in the cache to be put onto the SD card, it will flush it and it'll lessen the risk of getting corrupt file entries.
Well, the type of SD cards that I'm using right now are SanDisk. SanDisk is a very popular brand that I like. I'm using SanDisk Ultra. I'm actually holding one right now. I recently just picked up a 256 gigabyte normal card. The micro cards will work just fine. I actually left one by accident in my SL1, and it reads just fine. It's the regular SDs that I'm having a problem with. Typically, the 64 and 128 gigs, and even 256, which is what I'm holding right now, but the micros will
thank
be just
fine. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater System.
Ultra
and number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link clear. Okay, Craig, for some strange reason, the link is connecting and disconnecting. Perhaps Lou is adjusting things. Yeah, I wouldn't quite call them normal, because that's kind of not the standard chart. The regular size SD cards are called SD cards, and the micro SD cards are a micro SD card. I am always fascinated, because I'm an old codger, that you can put 256 gigabytes on a micro SD card the size of your thumbnail. Because I remember going into computer stores and seeing them with these big things that were about the size of a turntable, which might be an archaic thing to describe, that had 2 entire megabytes of data storage capability and only went for $2,000. So the exponential improvement of solid-state electronics and computer technology has been wondrous to me as I've grown older.
Yeah, it's just the regular cards that are having the problem. Typically the 128 gigs, since I use all three cameras with 128, and my 5DSR, I use 256. And even if I didn't shoot in RAW, it would still have this problem, but it would never do this if I use a micro card, and I don't really want to use micro cards. I want to use actual regular size cards, because then I got to put it into a reader, into the camera, and it's just a whole thing to do. That's why I just choose regular cards.
Okay, but that kind of, brings up a question in my mind. If you find that the micro SD cards don't give you this problem in your computer and the SD cards do, are they using the same slot and you're using an adapter for it, or are you using a different slot in whatever mechanism reads your SD and micro SD cards to your computer?
Yeah, I'm using a hub for cards. I'm actually on top of my disk reader, my external disk reader. I believe it is an Insignia. I believe that's the model. I think I picked it up from Best Buy or something for, I don't remember how much money. But yeah, the micros won't cause this problem. It's just the regular cards. It just takes forever to have everything load, and even if I try to right-click into eject disk, the window just freezes, it says not responding, and I'm like, come on, just make this thing work already. Like, why is it doing this to me? And it doesn't do it every time, it does it on certain cameras, preferably my DSLR. Diddy 20TV.
Okay. Again, I would suggest the safest, easiest thing is to just clean the slot in case the slot has a little schmutz inside of it. It might not always be making a perfect contact. It could be introducing noise and making it a little bit more difficult for the computer to assess the memory. It could be a problem in the chipset itself or that hub. Wesley, I believe I heard you. Do you have an opinion on this?
A micro SD card is just a smaller version of the standard SD card. No difference in the same technology, only different form factor. And it is used in phones and other devices where space is limited, so you can actually buy the bigger body, and put micro card in it, and it becomes the SD card, right? But there is another one. there is this CFAS card. I'm not sure if I probably put the processor, so if something is wrong with my signal, just tell me. Okay, so CFAS 2.0 memory card. In case you need extremely fast cards and quite good memory for it, then there is another card that is giving you more flexibility, and that one is the C2.0 fast card, which is the SanDisk Extreme Pro CFAS 2.0 memory card, which can come up to 512 gigabytes, but it's extremely expensive, so you may end up paying for this card about $600 or more, depends on the manufacturer, but they hold.
Okay, very good, Wes. Craig basically is using SD card technology, so he has full-size SD cards, he has micro SD cards. On some of his cameras, rather than use an adapter, I guess he would prefer to just use the SD cards that he has. He notices this problem with his computer accessing the SD card data. So that was the question for tonight.
82. Yeah, there is a camera, Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera Pro, 6K Pro. And that camera uses two different cards. So you could have just a regular SD card, or you could have the Extreme Pro, which is the Pro CFAS card. And of course, the Pro CFAS card is absolutely never a problem. But the problem is that it costs a lot of money. So the form factor of the CFAS is different than the regular memory card. And to actually take you.
Okay, Wesley, again, the problem, though, is that Craig has his cameras already. There are other cameras that have multiple formattable swaps, so they have other than SD card technology, but none that I know of that are his camera. And he's more interested in his camera than a theoretical camera or a camera that you could spend more money to buy. So he was kind of locked in on the standard size SD card. There was someone who doubled with you, unfortunately. So the other person who tried to get in, could you ID yourself, please?
KD2OGB.
Yes, Craig. I think someone was trying to get through, unless it was you when Wesley was talking. But yes, Craig.
Yeah, I forgot to mention. Keep in mind that I'm actually plugging the SD cards only into the computer. I don't really prefer to plug the camera with the SD card into the computer, only because I just don't really want to lay the camera anywhere and kind of give it more wear and tear. That's why I'm used to removing the cards from the camera and putting it into the computer rather than just connecting the camera and turning it on with the SD card.
Yeah, I mean, you'll find that most people do it exactly that same way. A lot of people will have a bunch of different cards, and if they fill up one, they'll swap it for another one, and then they'll pull the cards out and plug them into their computers. Being able to insert it into a slot, there are a lot of inexpensive adapters, the one that you use. You go to Amazon, and there's probably 50 different brands I've never heard of before that have the same type of chipset in them that offer flash card slots and full-size SD and micro SD and probably one or two other weird slots on a chipset. So I would agree with you that That's the method that I always use. It's cumbersome to have an expensive, heavy camera plugged into a USB port. You never know when someone will tug the cord and the camera will fly in some odd direction. So I would advise you to continue exactly what you're doing. That's, again, what my understanding is most people do.
I have a question. What camera is that?
I'll probably make some more room with my camera, but I could try to switch to that method and see what comes across. Maybe it'll start working, maybe it might not. And keep in mind, SD cards these days and thumb drives, they actually aren't that expensive. They are cheap. I mean, for like 256 gigabytes, even 128, they're like under $20 in most cases. They're very inexpensive. Like a 128 gigger for a Micro Extreme is $16 on Amazon. And for the Ultra, it's about a buck less. But when you go up higher in the price for storage, that's where it gets really expensive, because unlike regular internal hard drives that are probably like maybe $50 or $60 for like a 1 terabyte, if not maybe $40, if you try to get an SD card that's 1 terabyte, which does exist, you're looking at probably almost $150 to $160, because the item is so tiny, but the space is so huge, there are so many things that you can do with all that space. That's why it's so expensive.
Yes, Leslie, I hear you. One sec, let me just make sure that the repeater is fine. Okay. I don't know if that's exactly why the price is so high. The price is usually so high because the higher and higher density memories are the newest technology, the latest, greatest thing. They usually don't have initially the same percentage of yield that the lower density. You could make the lower density and, you know, 99% of the chips will pass quality assurance. At the higher end, it might be 40 or 60% make that. So there's a whole bunch. And also the demand is higher because it's the latest, greatest, newest thing. And if they develop higher and higher density memory chips, eventually those 512 and 1 terabyte memory chips will go down in price. Because it's happened the same thing with the 256 gigabyte. I remember when 256 gigabyte SD cards were $300-$400, and they went down. They'll hopefully keep going down. Hard drives, tend to be cheaper generally than solid state, although there might be some day when it's just cheaper and easier. You know, in the old days, they would sell thumb drives that had semi-ridiculously low capacity that you can't even find anymore. I mean, go try and find an under-gigabyte thumb drive, you know, maybe in a museum someplace. So that's my understanding for the cost of memory chips. And so hopefully they'll continue to go down. There's a lot of new foundries that are being built because everyone's worried about the chip shortage. So memory prices will hopefully go down as well. Leslie, you wanted to say something?
If we tend to forget for the moment density, whatever, the client wants to have good working memory. And what he should know about it. Because you have a word super, hyper, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's not important. It's a read and write speed. So, if we're talking about the SSD, the modern cameras accept SSDs and the SD cards or the CFast cards. Now, if you have a guaranteed 130 megabits per second, which would be VPG130, then you're fine. You can even go for 4K, which is 4096 by 2160p. Let me go. at 13 pixels. Now, if you want to have something really good, not good, but really good, then you're heading for 525 megabits per second, which would be, again, reading and writing. The reading would be 450 megabits per second and not less than this, and the write would be... The 525 megabits per second will be reading, and 450 megabits will be writing. And that's how the professionals right now are trying to find out what is good for them. And by the way, what camera are we talking about? The Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 6K Pro is the camera that I was talking about that accepts hard drive, SSD and SD cards and CFast cards too. What camera do you have?
Craig, do you want to answer Wes? He's interested in what model cameras you're using these days.
Okay. My main camera is the 5DSR from Canon, and the other one is the SL1. I'm using a 256 gigabyte with the 5DSR, and I have a 128 gigger with the SL1.
Are you talking about Canon 5D Mark IV?
The 5D, yes, but not the Mark IV. I have the DSR, Delta Sierra Romeo. It's the one that has that filter cancellation effect. The other model is the 5DF. I have the 5DSR.
Okay. I don't really know much about the difference, but this camera should accept the regular SD card, and it doesn't work with the CFast card. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Troy, what was he saying about which type of cards it should work with?
It works with regular CFast SD cards, but it doesn't work with CFast cards, the CFast 2.0, let's say.
Wesley just mentioned that it was his understanding, and my understanding as well, that your cameras do not take esoteric high-speed memory cards that were just... released in the last 3-4 years and are designed for either very high resolution video or sports type of mirrorless digital cameras that can pull a lot of pictures per second because after a while it loads up their cache, and so it slows down. So you need a very fast technology memory card in order to download the cache so that you can keep streaming a lot of sports images and stuff. But that wouldn't be the case with the cameras that you were using.
Are you saying it's what type of SD card I'm using, or is it the size that's the problem?
It's what kind of card do you use? The CFast card doesn't work with it.
I am using SanDisk Ultra. The one that I have, the Micro in my SL1, I'm using SanDisk Extreme, and that works fine. It's just the regular sized one. The SanDisk Ultra is what I'm having a problem with. Again, it's only 128 and 256 are the sizes that I'm having a problem with.
If I understand correctly, you have a 15.6 megapixel sensor. It's a humongous sensor. Now, if you try to get all of 61 points or AF system and make the picture in full resolution, it would be far field. I mean, it's not going to be... you're going to see like you were using the F4 lens, then you're going to have a problem with any memory, every memory, because this camera is very much requiring N2XGN.
Suck my dick. Why that nigga stop talking?
No, I think we kind of banged on this hard enough. We're kind of talking different things.
Nobody gives a fuck about what you're talking about, Cat.
The different forms have...
Suck my dick.
The newer ones tend to have a higher bit rate than SD cards previously.
The mother got eight.
Generational. So you'll see on SD cards, they'll be class 4 and class 5.
Yo, y'all niggas on the roof of y'all house talking? Y'all a whole bunch of faggots.
Early SD cards.
You keep talking, you gay.
See? So there are some people who have old devices that take SD cards or micro SD.
I knew you was a faggot talking about that hypo shit.
So if you give...
Yo, if you keep talking, you gay.
Know how to deal.
You keep talking?
The pins are...
That's my dick.
So
nothing, nigga.
Flash.
Y'all gonna ignore me like a real nigga not talking to y'all?
I know the technology.
Fuck you and your technology, nigga.
The particular form factor of a card, the technology of how much memory it can hold, and how fast it can transfer, read, and write the memories from the card. So those are kind of two different subjects.
Could you simplify that just a little shorter, Roy, after someone decided to interfere?
Yo, why y'all fucking with my brother, bro?
Okay, I'll give it one more try. There's a little bifurcation in this conversation. There are different...
Your mother to my dick is in this conversation, you pussy-ass nigga.
They're not micro SD cards. They're other types of cards. They've been designed over the last few years to optimize high amount of capacity, and high density, and high input-output speed. What you were talking about is good old SD cards, but even good old SD cards come in a whole different bunch of flavors. There are different classes. They have different input and output speed rates. As you mentioned, they're given nice brand names to differentiate themselves. They'll say it's a UHS-1. There's all kinds of nomenclature for different speeds. And also, there are devices that have chipsets to read these SD cards that are limited capacity. So there are older radios that take SD cards, but if you insert a high-capacity, modern-day SD card into some of those devices, they will be unable to access the higher density of memory available. So it would be sort of wasted on them.
So I guess my 5DSR is so powerful that these cards can't really process it then.
This is correct, but it depends on the card. It's which format do you use and what is it that you use, what is it that you want.
What? It's not that it can't process it, but it processes it slowly. So as long as the file is written to your card, it's fine. It's just that it takes a little bit longer to shuffle the bits on it and off of it. That's all. If you're getting proper images, then you're getting proper images. It's just a speed factor of how quickly it's dumping the cache memory of your camera to the SD card and how quickly it's transferring the memory from the card to your computer and caching it in its own memory so that it shows you a visual representation of those files.
I remember when I bought the 256, when I... This format... ...language that it recognizes, and even that sometimes doesn't always do what you think it does.
Okay, unfortunately someone was playing with their radio, so I didn't get the entirety of it. One of the problems that sometimes happens with SD cards is they're not formatted in the format that you would like them to be. Them in FAT32, you might want them in NT. And, you know, then you might have to reformat your SD card. But, you know, that's the least problem. There were problems about 5-6 years ago with the operating system where there were some ways that you could set up the format of an SD card where Windows had a great deal of problem formatting over it. But I think that problem has been solved lately because I haven't heard anyone complain about that recently.
Yeah, if you would.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, but it looks like I'm trying to be very much condensed in what I'm talking, but we're talking about the camera, and let's say we're taking raw shots, right? And we feel the buffer, let's say in this particular camera, that we're 13 or 14, and the size of raw file is 52.6 megabits. Then, in this row, we have to also look at format. So if it is going to be JPEG files of 9 megabytes or size of the buffer is 512 megabytes, then the memory must be able to handle it. In other words, you may look at the specific memory card for the specific task at this camera. Let's say you have a computer bay 32 gigabytes 1066X, which would give you the read 153 megabits per second and write 135 megabits per second. It's not going to work with, it's going to work with 5DSR, but it's not going to work with RAW file, because the RAW file is just an uncompressed file. But then you can look at Lexar, or you can look at other cards, and or Toshiba, or SanDisk, or whatever, and then you're going to be looking at the maximum read and write speed. And let's see it.
Well, in my opinion, a lot of brands, SanDisk being one, has an entire range of high and medium speed chips and cards. So it's not necessarily that you have to go to a different manufacturer. You just have to pay more of a premium for the higher end card if you want to have a higher read write speed capability.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The only problem is that if you look at the internet, there are plenty of companies saying, okay, we have such a big memory, we have this and that and that, and then in the essence, it doesn't work with the particular camera. And I made it so many times, even with my cameras that I have. So what I do is I read and look what is suggested for that particular camera for that particular compression format, or that particular RAW files, or that particular picture that I want to take, or set of the picture in given format. Maybe you can translate it from English into English, Dr. Ray.
I think Craig appreciates the fact that he has to look at the specs and see what the recommended rate for SD cards should be. People should always kind of do that so that they're operating with not tight tolerances. You know, we selected all kinds of cards as we get older, and you can't just kind of throw the oldest card you have into the newest piece of equipment and expect it to do the best job possible, because the rates of input and output improve over time and all kinds of quality issues. So I'm sure he appreciates and understands that. I think Craig's question was more related with transferring the files that he already had off of the card into his computer, that for some reason the hub seems to have a problem decoding the digital recordings of his full-size cards versus his micro cards, which don't cause him any problems. So I was thinking that it might just be a problem with the hub itself. I understand that you think it might be somehow related to the input-output speeds of at the computer end, but if the files are there, then the files are there. It shouldn't have any effect about the I/O speeds. It should just be a matter of being able to extract the memory card data into the computer without causing things to crash and go wrong.
Oh, now I got it.
Using
okay,
the,
a bottleneck. What I do is I never transfer. I just copy. Copy and paste.
It's actually
let it go to whatever time it takes. Never transfer. I'll go through this also, just copy and paste. Once I have it in the computer is much faster than the than any memory card. And it's in SSD memory or whatever the temporal memory, but it's handled by my SSD drive that is inside of the computer. Now I have no problem to take that copy and transfer it to whatever I want to. I usually use DaVinci Resolve 17. And I can transfer it to the proper format that fits to that program and to it here.
Get like 10 or 15 of them for that price, 8020.
Okay, unfortunately, thanks to the nature of our new link, I was able to hear both of you simultaneously talking. Unfortunately, Craig, your audio is about 6 dB lower than Wesley's, so I heard most of what he said and not much of what you said. But the two of you had a had a transmission that were almost equal with length.
Okay, so can you tell him what I said?
I tell you, I was so confused by the two of you that I didn't really register it in my mind. If you would like to go first, Wesley, and kind of give a synopsis of that, and then Craig can respond, that probably would be the best route.
Okay. Thank you very much. So what I do is I never transfer. I take the copy, I do the copy and paste it to the computer. I don't create a bottleneck. I don't rely on whatever the speed of transfer it is. So there is no transfer. So I copy, I paste, and then once I paste, that file is already in the SSD of the computer. Now the SSD speed of the computer is much faster than any other memory card and has no limitation. Now I can take this copy that is already in the computer and transfer it to whatever software I need, let's say DaVinci Resolve 17, in the format that is required. Thank you.
Okay, I got a little problem with that. What I'm assessing, that what I think you said is instead of doing a move, you do a copy. So you copy the original from the SD card over to the computer. The only difference between a copy versus a move is a move copies and then deletes the original after it's guaranteed that it's copied it to the final location. So it's a little bit shorter, but not much. It's functionally pretty much the same throughput. The operation of deleting it from the SD card is a rather rapid one because all it does is empty the FAT index at the beginning of the partition of the drive. So all the data still remains there, but the index of how to get it is gone, and it lists that space as empty and available to report more data.
Not necessarily. You're talking about copy and move. I'm talking about copy and transfer. We're doing transfer if the software is asking for the file in this location. With a move that is similar to copy, but when I copy, I still have a hard copy of that what I copy is made a copy from, so I'm never losing the data. And then I have unlimited time to wait till that copy is actually on my computer. And to issue.
Okay, I've been playing around with computers for 40 years. I don't really recall much in the way of transfer, unless it's something that's listed as a particular computer. As far as I'm aware, the transfer is basically just move, I guess, where you're outputting the data to another memory device, and then at the end you're wiping the file allocation table of the original, so that it's moving or transferring, but as opposed to copying, where you do the same operation, but you don't blank the sources file allocation table, so now you have two versions of the same bunch of files, one on the source medium and one on the medium that you're directing it to be sent to.
I understand where the confusion lies. The thing is that I'm dealing with the professional editing software. So professional editing software can have 500 different places where the files are. And then it's transferring a requested piece of the clip from each one of the locations. And that is being called the transfer now. That software is looking for a particular format or is converting to the particular format. We don't want to deal with that. The early version of the transfer was the memory, my memory, Sony, my memory software. My memory software was the home-based software that was also looking to get the information about the location of the files and take the first picture of it and memorize it. If there was a set of the pictures, there was a clip. Now, what we want is, we want no changes, no nothing. We want to move, like you say, move or copy. That would be different than transfer. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that operation is specific to proprietary software that I don't have, that Craig doesn't have, that we don't use. We got to kind of keep it simple because it's very easy to keep things very complicated, obscure, and no one figures out what each other person is talking about. So you keep it very simple with the everyone knows the difference, hopefully, between a copy and a move operation in operating systems, both Windows and Apple. So unfortunately, once again, Craig, your last comment was kind of merged with Wesley's as you doubled with him. Would you like to repeat yourself or in a shorter form? Whatever.
Nah, not really. I'm going to just try the camera method and see what I can get out of that. Or I'll test the micro card in the 5DSR next time I go out and see what I can get out of that. Otherwise, I'll just have to keep doing it the old-fashioned way. But I do thank you for the help, at least. H2GS Net Control, K82OG.
You're welcome, Craig. Come back again. You know where we are. And thanks for participating tonight. Next on my list is Rob, KD2UQK. What's your question or comment for tonight, Rob?
Well, good evening, Roy and the rest of the net. This is Rob, KD2UQK. Just a probably a pretty easy question for you, Roy. I recently got a Comet antenna duplexer, but not really, it's more of a diplexer, right? So has one input, 1.3 to 400 to 170 megahertz, and another input from 350 to 540 megahertz goes out to one common, right? So the use case I'm using it for is I'm mixing two Motorola CDM1250s, one VHF and one UHF, into the same dual band antenna. And what I've seen touted around quite a bit is that this unit has sufficient isolation between the two inputs in order to provide, you know, power not going to the either other radio from the other radio. So this specific one touts negative 60 dB of isolation between the two inputs. And I was just wondering what the point of acceptable isolation is to not hurt the transmitter after a long duty cycle. So whether it be 60 or like 90, I've seen some 2 meter real 2 meter repeater duplexes with like 120 dB of isolation. So I was just wondering what is a good number for isolation for this, right?
Okay, very good. I agree with you. I find it very annoying that manufacturers are kind of screwing around and calling diplexers duplexers because it confuses a lot of people. Proper duplexers are found on repeaters and are very, very high Q. reject off frequencies much better than a diplexer and are exceedingly more expensive. They're usually cavity devices as opposed to components, of which your diplexer is a component. 60 dB is a decent one. It isolates it to one in a million, which is pretty good. The situation we had a couple of months ago, where a gentleman was told by the technical staff of a radio company that he had put too much into his front end. They quoted 100 milliwatts. It depends upon the radio. Different designs have different tolerances for being put into the receiver's front end. You want to try and get it to, below something like 10 milliwatts. So depending upon how much power you're putting into the other side, you're getting one millionth supposedly of that. And, unless you're running a really, really powerful station, it's kind of easy to keep it down to the milliwatt. But it can be specific to the radio that you're using. Some radios are just more bulletproof than others. But a 60 dB isolation for a standard UHF and EHF system should suffice. I know of no one that's had any kind of problem with that setup.
All right. Well, that's good to know, because I've heard of people using it in using diplexers in repeater situations, with an extremely high duty cycle of both transmitting at the same time. So, and it never reported any problems. So, all right, I'll stick with that. It's not going between two cheap radios. It's two fairly expensive pieces of equipment. So I was just wondering if it was I want to get the maximum amount of time transmitting as I can without failure or damage to either radio, because it would be quite expensive to replace. But thanks, Roy. I appreciate it. That's really all I got.
Yes, I did, you.
Yeah, just a note on the diplexer. The older, when I first started the hobby, this is like the late 80s, 90s, your mobile radios, VHF, UHF dual bands, used to be literally have two antenna outputs. This 721 old Kenwood that I'm using now has this, where it has an output for VHF and UHF, 2 meters and 440. And what people used to do was get a diplexer of that type and, use one antenna, and it worked. But then as years went on, not too much later, you have the one antenna output, the diplexer function was done inside the radio in some fashion. So this stuff works. I haven't blown anything up yet, so, it does work.
Okay, very good. Yeah, historically, that's true. And every so often, I have, for whatever reason, seen modern UHF, VHF radios where they also have separate outputs. So, although it's rarer now than it was in the past, it still exists. And diplexers are very good design. I just wish they would label them diplexers instead of duplexers. Again, because it confuses people, when you're starting to be a technician Nazi, unfortunately, and they'll show you a manufacturer who calls their diplexer a duplexer, you have to explain to them that not all manufacturers are familiar with the English language. I think Dewa is the company that sells things called duplexes that are diplexes. I think they're Japanese company, so some odd reason they got it wrong. Okay, very good.
Okay, thanks, Roy. I appreciate it. That's all I got. Thank you.
Participation. Earlier tonight, I heard Jeff, AB6MB. Are you still with us, Jeff?
I am still with you, Roy, and this is Jeff, AB6MB. I was going to mention that Rob is a fellow net control with me, net controller on the Papa system. He handles the P25 net every other week, and he's actually filled in on other nets too. So, can and does a great job of it, too. Actually, I just wanted to drop in and say Happy New Year to everybody out there. I haven't been on the net in a little while, and just want to wish everybody a great New Year. Great discussions going on. And, yeah, and Rob talking about, and you talking about the diplexer versus duplexer. I had a heck of a time trying to figure it out, trying to help out another ham between the two. And even now I'm still kind of a little hazy on it, but... Yeah, like you said, it'd be nice if there's just one, label for it. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Roy. Thanks for doing that. EB6MB.
You're welcome, Jeff. Let me add a little concise message from John KD2BD, who is a gentleman who listens to our stream, and he can't get in.